Every conductor, at least those in the real world that we use every day, have, in addition to resistance, they also have capacitance to, that is, a relative, a willingness to hold charge with respect to conductors around them. They also exhibit, whenever you pass current through them, the property that they generate magnetic fields around them. And if you take advantage of these other characteristics, interesting things happen. If you flatten a conductor out, or a couple of conductors out into a big flat plate, and you put a real small spacing between the two plates, the amount of charge that they're able to hold goes up quite a bit, and I've given you an equation that kind of describes that. But just two flat plates that are spaced apart by, in this case, air. The dielectric constant of air is air has a dielectric of 1 by definition. All other dielectrics are sort of reference to air, because air is pretty common and it sort of is rather uniform around the world. But just two flat plates next to each other is not a very efficient use of the materials that make a capacitor. So one of the tricks is that they put a whole bunch of plates together in a stack, separated, of course, so they don't touch each other. That would short them out. Just putting them together in a stack takes advantage of both sides of the plate until you get to the ends of the stack, where only one plate is facing another. That explains the N-1 in the equation for the amount of capacitance a capacitor holds. If you connect a shaft, like I've shown, sort of a little metal bar with sort of a green glint coming off of it. If you create a shaft that it can, its pivots on bearings or something, it can rotate, and you were to rotate it, you would move the plates out of the intervening plates. You would separate them out. And if you do this, the actual surface area goes down, can reduce almost to zero. This is the basis of a mechanical variable capacitor that they use to tune radios and things with. The tuning knob that you grab a hold of on a radio is basically just that. It's a bunch of interleaving plates. Every other one is fixed to an immovable mounting device that's an insulated thing. And the other one is fixed to a rotating device so that it can move the plates apart. In the old days, they used to precision align them so that air was the only thing that touched the plates. The plates were very carefully aligned so that they didn't touch each other whenever they rotated. Modern radios, they use probably a Teflon material in between the plates, which acts as a better dielectric. It has a higher dielectric constant than air, so you can make the variable capacitor much smaller. And so transistor radios have tuners in them. You very rarely see a transistor radio anymore that has one that doesn't use the new Teflon sheeted type of variable capacitor. The notion that you can change the capacitance by rotating the plates out has some interesting ramifications when you get into charge stored in the capacitor. Conservation of energy pretty much dictates that if you have potential energy stored in a capacitor when you rotate the plates out, that the energy doesn't disappear it still remains. And so what happens to this? Well, you're charging, as I will get into in the next lecture, you're charging current for a period of time, which creates a voltage across the capacitance. If that coulomb of charge or coulombs of charge, whatever, is in the capacitor, when you rotate this out, for the energy to remain the same, not exactly, because some of it's absorbed or input into the system by the mechanics of rotating the capacitor. That has to be taken into account. But for the most part, what happens is the voltage goes up. The voltage, you have a capacitor with a given amount of capacitance, and you reduce its capacitance, and it has a certain amount of charge on it, which is represented by the voltage, then since there's less capacitor to hold the charge, the result is the voltage goes up. So that's sort of a clever side effect of the notion of varying capacitance. When you do this, when you vary the capacitance this way, you create a situation that produces more voltage, and you can rely on this. You can exploit this, take advantage of it, and that is how some of the static electricity generators work. The more practical ones, Wimhurst comes to mind. Van de Graaff is a variation of this. So that's just an interesting side effect of this. Coils. If you just simply wrap enameled wire, the reason that they use enameled wire, they take copper wire and they put enamel on it, and then they wind it into a coil, is that the enamel serves as an insulator so that the windings, the turns of wire don't short to one another. And it serves as a very, very thin insulator. That is, when you're winding a coil, you don't want to waste a lot of the useful area inside the coil itself. You want to get as many, turns of copper as possible, and as much copper in the more copper in the coil, the better, because if you end up with a coil that doesn't have as much copper in it, because it's got mostly insulation, then it's the resistance of the windings is higher and so forth, because there's less copper available within the cross-sectional area that you can wind the coil. I show a coil on the lower left-hand picture. That's just a real simple coil. It's a cylindrical insulated section, has some turns of wire wrapped on it. That's the simplest kind of coil there is. And then I show a blue soft iron metal bar going through the middle of it. And if you add soft iron to an air core inductor, it makes the amount of inductance that you get out of it orders of magnitude greater than it otherwise would have been, because air is not very permeable, and you add a soft iron core to it, it can greatly increase the amount of inductance that is present in the inductor, which I'll get into that in a minute. Point is that since inserting it does that, well, if you remove it, of course, you get less inductance, and so that is one of the ways in which they make a variable inductor, an adjustable inductor. Just like in the case of a variable capacitor, the amount of capacitance can be controlled by adjusting the plates. In the case of a variable inductor, one of the easy ways to make them adjustable is to make the material that magnetizes screw into the hollow tube. And so that's the way variable inductors are made. There are other ways to make them, but that is one of the more simple ways that they make them. Interestingly enough, a soft iron core, if you power the magnet, you put electric current through the coil, it generates magnetism, and this tends to draw the soft iron into the coil. It becomes a solenoid. It becomes an electromagnet drawing this thing in. You can optimize this by creating a complete magnetic circuit around the outside of the coil, which they do whenever they make solenoids specifically for this purpose. And as the pull piece, or the magnetic material, is drawn into the coil, not only does its inductance change as this happens, but also energy is being extracted out of the system, and that energy manifests itself by gobbling up magnetic fields that had been established. So you see a dip in current as the metal moves, if it moves into the coil. Conversely, if while it's trying to pull the metal in, you were to grab a hold of the metal and pull it back out of the coil, you would see an increase in current, because you're actually generating power against the battery. And so the action of the motion of the material is also has a lot of interactions to it. I show you the formula for computing the amount of capacitance in a multiplate capacitor. I also show you a practical, although inaccurate, meaning that it's only an approximation. Real coils are terribly complicated. I show you an approximation of the inductance of a coil based on its physical size and so forth. Let me briefly touch on a couple of points that need to be made here. The A figure, or the A parameter that's describing the coil. Notice that it is a measurement of the mean radius of the actual coil area itself. We're assuming this is a bobbin, and you're going to wind wire onto this bobbin and fill it up to where it is even with the outside of the bobbin. The A figure is not the radius of the circle, it is the mean radius. In other words, between an empty bobbin and a full bobbin of wire, A is strikes that middle point in there. And if you miss that detail whenever you go measuring things and trying to predict the inductance that a coil will have, you'll get it real wrong if you don't notice that A only points to the mean radius and not the outside radius. C similarly is essentially the thickness of the winding area of the coil. You need the inside diameter and the outside diameter of the wire itself to get C. The rest of the equation is fairly straightforward. This is an English equation, that is, it uses inches and microhenries, which is, henries is really the root thing. And later on in the notes, I've included a formula basically rewritten this formula so that it works with metric units, which is probably what you would prefer to use. Maybe not. I suppose I could reverse engineer the capacitor formula to come up with English units, but I didn't. I don't know, if I get enough requests for that, I might even do that. But I've given you kind of all this was supposed to do is give you some kind of a brief idea of how you would go about building a capacitor and an inductor. The next frame, I intend to give you more detailed information on how they work in circuits, but it's nice to know how you make them. So, on to the next lesson.